Hi, this is Michelle Sherman, president of MishRx Pharmacist Consulting Services and the host of the Conscious Pharmacist podcast. As far back as I can remember growing up in South Africa, one thing was always obvious to me. It was something that emanated from my soul, if you will. It was the knowing that all human beings are created equal, that we are all the same. The Conscious Pharmacist podcast is proud to be a podcast on the Pharmacy Podcast Network and is a show for pharmacist healthcare providers who have answered the call to practice on purpose. Being conscious brings to light disparities and injustices in our society and healthcare system. Our show strives to bring to the forefront these issues we face today in a changing healthcare landscape and how we can change lives one patient at a time. As pharmacists, we do what matters, how we practice what matters, and how we take care of patients matters. Be conscious. Speak out. Every voice matters. Be the change you wish to see in the world.
You're listening to the Pharmacy Podcast Network.
Some time ago, I had the honor of interviewing Ernst & Young's Dr. Aluko, who is just a visionary of better global health and some of the issues that we experience on a global scale. One of those is health equity and how racism and pharmacy deserts and healthcare deserts and our payment models need to shift in order to give more care and more specific services to places throughout our world that is in desperate need. Here in the United States, we are experiencing that throughout the nation, which is surprising when we have so many resources. Dr. Yili Aluko is Chief Medical Officer of Ernst & Young's Americas. And today, the Ernst & Young team returns to the Pharmacy Podcast Network. We're so excited to welcome Pamela Spence. She's Ernst & Young Global Health Science and Wellness Industry Leader. Welcome, Pamela.
Well, thank you very much for having me. Excited to be here and, really an avid listener of some of your podcasts. So thank you very much. Delighted.
That's wonderful to hear. We have a captive audience that has really used the publication to listen to over 30 different hosts that have really kind of dug into really meaningful themes. Much of that sometimes comes back to the individual who might be talking about science or artificial intelligence, drug development, pharmacogenomics, which is fascinating. Today, we're talking about the five trends redefining the health sciences and wellness operating model and the study that you designed and wrote, which is this title, which we're going to have in the show notes. So anybody listening, you'll have access to the Ernst & Young publication in your show notes. And Pamela, you did a very good job in your brief, pushing out the ideas that you have, placing the patient at the center of healthcare. The demand for the patient consumer has accelerated, and the acceptance and adoption of new technologies and the data that fuels them. And this is an interesting subject for me. That's how I started in the pharmacy industry way back in 2004, focused on institutional pharmacy management systems that was designed specifically to care for seniors, for people in institutional settings, and how the needs to customize services were so important. And when I read through your paper, I was really interested in really exploring your ideas of how digital technologies, digital health, digital therapeutics, platforms, and gamification, how we utilize this, place this in the hands of our providers, our physicians, our nurses, our pharmacists, to accelerate care and meet people where they are instead of the opposite and expecting the old model of medicine, which is expecting the patient to come to, you know, the source. But I think we're returning to multiple aspects of healthcare customization. But I wanted you to give an overview to our listeners of your insights and a little bit about yourself as well.
Sure. Well, no, thank you. And I think we all work in healthcare because we care passionately about people and people's well-being. And I'm, you know, I've spent 30 or so years now working in the technology and also healthcare industry. But health, working in healthcare really gives me the purpose and the technology and innovations that we are seeing, particularly around sensors and AI and machine learning. I think all really can sort of drive to the industry being able to offer better care for the people, the citizens of different geographies. But I think, you know, our five trends report, I'm a big believer in trying to be practical and really, but thinking about how companies can obviously do what they need to do today, but really start thinking strategically about making sure that they have a winning proposition in the future. And so we started the sort of five trends report really just examining what actually matters today. And we know that healthcare is becoming, taking even a larger and larger share of any GDP, no matter whether it's developing or emerging markets. We know technology innovation is very exciting. We know that patients, customers are becoming more and more demanding as they're becoming more informed. I'd like to say well informed, but obviously there is information out there that does distract a little. But I also think that efficiency in care is now being pushed over into the life sciences companies as well as the payers and providers. I think previously life sciences companies have rightly been very focused on quality and efficacy of the products, the medicines, the amazing medicines that they innovate and produce. But I think even them now are really beginning to think about productivity assessments. So, I mean, we all know that's happening, but what does that actually mean practically? And we have a vision for a smart health system of the future. We've released a video and we'll obviously share with you and your team that you can profile that. But pairing that back against that sort of backdrop, what is it that's really going to make a difference? What are the winning characteristics? What do we actually see happening in other industries? The Amazons, the Netflix, the Ubers, and if you look at the other industries and those characteristics, if you pair back what is success in their business model, it really all boils down to, is it convenient? Is it seamless? Is it personalized and predictive? Is there a lot of choice? And how transparent is it? And if you take those characteristics and think, golly, you know, what does that actually look like in healthcare? And what would it take to drive a really great health experience? You know, unlocking the power of data like these other industries have really done to really drive a health experience, driving better positive health outcomes with high degrees of personalization. And what is it that we believe practically are the elements to driving that better health outcome? So that's where that's the sort of the backdrop to where we got to with, the five trends and things that companies we would encourage really focus on as they look to transform their business models, their operating models for the future. And those five trends being, firstly, humans at the center, and really think about what is it that the customer, the patient actually really wants. I think the industry has been set up for years and years that the physician is the customer, largely driven by the, obviously the recommendations to prescribe and the care and the treatment plan. But ultimately, the customer who often doesn't pay for it directly is the patient. And I use the words consumer patient interchangeably. And so I think, really putting humans at the center of your strategy and what are you doing today, is that going to drive a better outcome for the patient themselves as directly as you can? The second trend that we really looked at is supply chain. And we can see that the fantastic innovations that are happening now in cell and gene therapy and CAR T, and we're doing a lot of work at EY in terms of making the delivery of some of these CAR T complicated treatments a reality from a logistics perspective, supply chain perspective. But we see that the complexity around the supply chain bringing such personalized therapies to market, because it's vein to vein or data to vein, which requires, you know, a reversed and engineered supply chain to go back from the patient into the laboratory and then the laboratory back to the patient with this augmented T cells in the treatment. But we've also, as well as that sort of depth of personalized medicine, you've also got how can physicians and, you know, I would argue as time moves on, the importance of the pharmacy becoming much more into the fore in primary care, how can we actually use data and technology to better prescribe and better measure with sensors and whatever, that degree of the personalization on the supply chain, on the effect of the medicine. So I think the whole element of, is the supply chain that we're fitting into going to be match fit for that high degree, the agile nature of prescribing and also delivering of these new cell and gene therapies. I think the third trend that we were really looking at is outcomes-based reimbursement or value-based care. And I think that will require a real acceleration of more innovative contracts, especially around some of the curative therapies that we're seeing on the market. And how do you price to that? If you're actually going to cure somebody of a disease, do you avoid, you know, operating room costs and therefore what should be the price point? I think that's a very interesting debate and discussion. You know, the data needs to flow around the whole network much more easily, and ultimately actually to create real value, you quite often don't just want access to your own organizational data and be able to interrogate that in a much more structured way, but actually access to others' data in the supply chain. And I'm not suggesting for an instance there's one big massive data lake that everyone can access. I think that we used to talk a few years ago about data lakes, but actually owning data is just a cost. Access to specific data, if you are really clear on what do you want to do with it. I say to many companies, you know, analysis for analysis' sake, what data do you want? Oh, we need to do some analysis, but what analysis do you want to do and why? And why do you need to do that? And so that access to data that you don't own, I think, is going to become really critical. And then lastly, sustainability. I mean, we had the G7 actually not too far from where I was a few weeks ago. In England, we had the G7 and you know, there's a big worry around how sustainable are our practices, not really just for the good of the planet, but the reality that, you know, as advancements progress, we need to really act more sustainably. And so those were the trends that we are saying practically against that strategic backdrop. We encourage people to think about their operating models in those specific areas. And against, as you can see in the report, each of those areas, we suggest, coming back to the data point, you know, what data is going to be most important for the different business models that one might like to operate, be it an organization that focuses on services, and I would categorize those as disease manager services when a consumer patient is sick. Do you want to actually operate in the pre-disease area? I would call that a lifestyle manager. Do you want to really focus on innovating and delivery of products? I'd call that a breakthrough innovator. And do you want to be more an efficient producer and actually offer well-tried and tested medicines, but at much reduced cost, which means reinventing the whole production process? So depending on where you want to play, it has a different axes on what particular attribute within that five trends framework you might want to focus on. And I appreciate I'm talking about four different business models and five trends, but if you look at the report, we get quite specific on the interplay of marrying up what data you want to help progress or measure your progression against your business strategy.
There is a trend, Pamela, happening in the pharmacy profession in the United States where there are 300,000, right over 300,000 active pharmacists. And I'm paying attention to what is trending. And over the last 3 years, it's accelerated to have the consultant pharmacist, which was traditionally in charge of managing senior care medications by going into a nursing home, making the assessments, bringing that data back to a physician to make any changes to the medications, deprescribing of medications, of the cascade prescribing phenomena that many of our seniors go through. And what I'm seeing, and I believe 10% of that 300,000 will be in pure and permanent consultative roles that will then consult with primary care, with pediatrics, with specialty disease states. And when I look at your report, if you're listening right now and you're interested in your own business, you're interested in becoming a consultative entrepreneur in pharmacy, you have to find this report, go into our show notes and read through this. And I want to come back to the four types of business models that have been defined in this report. Number one is that breakthrough innovator. Number two is the disease manager. Number three, the efficient producer. And number four, the lifestyle manager. And Pamela, the reason why I want to come back to these is because that consultative pharmacist, that consultant pharmacist that's out there, could definitely fit into one of these four business models and then drive that value. And by the way, the more specific that you get, the more opportunity you have to stand out from the crowd. So if you're listening to this podcast and you've worked big chain retail for years, and we've heard a lot of this, Pamela, where we hear about burnout of pharmacists that are working in the retail sector. If you have accumulated that 2 years, 5 years, 10 years of experience serving your public, there's a tremendous amount of data, there's a tremendous amount of understanding, and there's a tremendous amount of empathy that you have for the public that you don't want to just push aside in your experiences. You could transfer that to that consultative role and decide, am I a breakthrough innovator? Am I someone who will capture value in best class products and demand that high net worth for an individual healthcare systems, digging into very specific disease states? Am I a disease manager? Am I someone who's creating value by having a deeper understanding and a relationship that I've built with my patients and consumers? And I'm focusing on specific, like maybe the behavioral health sciences, mental health as an expert, or efficient producer, as you've mentioned, those who deliver that efficient operations understanding, someone who helps to streamline long-term care pharmacy operations, or someone who streamlines health system pharmacy. This is worth so much to those organizations that they would have and bring in an expert who understands it because they were saturated and soaked in it for years and can bring back those experiences through data and reporting to deliver something that can impact the population health of that health system. And then number four, like you brought up, I think of several organizations, Pamela. There's a company called Capsule RX, Sonia Patel. There's other Hims and Hers, which are lifestyle specific medication experts that drive down into erectile dysfunction, for example, or women health services specifically in reproductive issues and reproductive consultations, where now we're getting very, very specific and we're saying, we're going to supply wellness solutions as experts of pharmacists of medication management to help lower the expense based on the ongoing management for this mass market in using my community as power instead of going, you know, nationally. Now I'm a community consultant pharmacist, and I'm keeping the aim around a specific disease state by capturing the value that I bring to my community because now I'm trusted and I'm known within my community. I think there's a tremendous amount of power in that for the individual pharmacist and to feel that they can literally make a difference if they don't want to stay within, you know, the chain pharmacist environment, for example. And that's what I'm going to take this report, Pamela, and I'm going to kind of try to help coach those consultant pharmacists. I actually have a list of these consultant pharmacists, and those are the first individuals who are going to get access to this podcast.
I think you're absolutely right there. I think that our pharmacist actually can bring is a real understanding of the consumer patient, because they see them day in, day out, probably more frequently than the physicians. And I think that's what, you know, we talk about humans at the center, and that's really at the heart of that is, you know, people are people, they're not machines. They respond in rational, but also irrational ways. And actually having that empathetic understanding and that history, I think that the pharmacy frontline, you know, blended with technology and a bit of data, can add a huge amount. And I would argue that as the whole primary care and secondary care models sort of shift, I see, you know, there's a booming need for an opportunity for the pharmacists, definitely. Interestingly, my father always wanted me to be a pharmacist, and I chose biochemistry, not pharmacy, at university, and then went into R&D. But it's funny how life is sort of, you're never too far away from what your parents always thought was best for you. And you don't want to admit it until you're, you know, probably as old as I am now.
Yes. And it's interesting how you said a pharmacist probably sees their patients more often than the primary care. And that's true. The metrics we have out of the United States is 10 to 1. So every time a primary care physician sees their patient, they're seeing their pharmacist 10 times. So with that comes a huge opportunity to take those metrics and those connection points and pull your patients out of the machine that some of our pharmacy models have created that have depersonalized medicine, which I don't like seeing, but it's almost like capitalism in America, capitalism in the world wants to put a volume into medicine. And I believe and am seeing through trends, it's going the absolute opposite direction. It's now becoming personalized medicine. I know in my lifetime, Pamela, that I will see a time where they will take a base compound medication that is mass produced, and they'll leave an opportunity through some type of 3D printer to take a pharmacogenomics test of you and saying, hey, your doctor has put you on the ABC medication for, maybe it's a psychotropic drug, maybe it's a cardiovascular med. And they will make you take that test, have you take that test to ensure that you're going to metabolize that med. And then they'll, right on premise, alter the very last component to ensure that you're going to absorb that medication as intended and as designed. And I guarantee that's probably going to happen in our lifetime.
Oh, no question. I think that miniature modification, because, you know, all our bodies are different. And, you know, I don't want to cite the statistic, but it's well known in some circles that, you know, not all medicines work, right? And we can see that the patient. But actually having that direct feedback loop on, is this working for me? You know, the actual scientific data, is it not? But also I think another thing that we're working on in terms of the outcomes an innovation contract, sometimes if the patient feels better, it doesn't matter what the data says and the doctor says, if I'm actually feeling better and leading a more active life, that should count for a lot too. And again, that empathetic view that and the skills that you know, experienced pharmacists have developed over the years, I think that is the psychological well-being. You know, we don't understand enough about it. So I guess I'm just reinforcing what you're saying. There's a huge opportunity. One thing though I would add in the business models, and you sort of described them well, the disease manager, the lifestyle manager, the efficient producer, and the breakthrough innovator. I think depending on which route folk want to go, I think there's a real delineation about how value is created. You know, what effectively is your USP, your unique selling model, or and who actually are you targeting? Because it's not a one size fits all. You know, if you're a disease manager, then, you know, you're probably operating a bespoke service and you really need to understand the customer and the relationships and the service model around the product versus a breakthrough innovator. And then you're much more actively looking at the scientific product efficacy. So I'd encourage your community to really look at the graph that we have in the report that really illustrates how value is created. You know, what is your offer and who is going to appreciate and demand that value, i.e. your customer.
So you mentioned in your report eTechRx, who has been a shining star digital therapeutic provider and developer in my world. I was personal friends with Harry Travis, who was the initial CEO of that organization, who then it was adopted as he moved on to a different position by Valerie Sullivan, who's now their acting CEO. And being able to ingest a medication in a digital capsule that responds to your stomach acid, activates a power ability through that, and then feed data to an iPhone that's you know, that's being held by the intake, by the patient themselves, to have data and where that could go to expedite the specific data that the physician, that the pharmacist wants to act on. And then pairing that with quote unquote paratherapeutics and what you mentioned. Can you talk about your interest in those two organizations and how that ties back to personalization?
Yeah, I mean, I don't tend to comment on any detail in specific companies, you know, given our regulated industry. But what I would say is I think there's a huge opportunity. It's very fragmented to actually get digital therapeutics right. I mean, another example I've had witness to is actually medication being turned on and off with sensors inside a patient, but the on and off can be turned on with specific UV light. And, you know, and all of these technologies need to be developed. But I think there's a huge, huge opportunity for digital therapeutics. But what I think we definitely do need with those digital therapeutics is that feedback loop on the sensor. And I think that the opportunity that 5G gives us, now 5G is coming on stream, particularly in Europe. I know that mobile telephony often gets Europe first and the US slightly behind, but 5G and that opportunity to transmit high volumes of complex data at speed wirelessly, I think that's huge. I think that will break down a lot of the barriers that some of the sensor technologies and other digital therapeutics have actually had in the past. Because I think that the AI and the machine learning algorithms are very good, but it's like the data transmission, which has always been a bit clunky. So I think that will unleash a whole world of opportunity. Or I'm optimistic that it will anyway.
Yes, me as well. I like the fact that there's also a responsibility as a healthcare provider to not lag behind in the technologies that are out there, and assuring that our healthcare system aligns the best provider to pull that data and utilize that data to then be a team member of multiple providers, especially for our rare disease states that people are suffering with. And an example of this is the extraction of data. Who should get the data in order to make an adjustment in treatment or an assessment of treatment, and how the pharmacist is tied in, and in my opinion, how they're underutilized with regards to treatment protocols that are ongoing for serious disease states, to be able to track out the outcomes in stages so that medications might be adjusted along that treatment, especially when I'm thinking of cancers, and empowering the pharmacist to make recommendations on the fly so that the physician isn't always the choke point in services, in the choke point that we see now in the United States, for example. You know, we don't have enough primary care and physicians. They say by 2030, there's going to be a huge deficit of our primary care physicians. Well, as we see in the United States, once again, that 300,000 plus active pharmacists are waiting to be thrown into the game of personalized care at a much greater level than they are today. The consultant pharmacists, Pamela, they're not waiting. They're out there doing it through collaborative care agreements. They're doing it through incident two billing. And we know that provider status is also coming to the United States, which has always been a head scratcher for me that our US-based healthcare system, CMS, doesn't view a pharmacist as an actual provider. And we've done things incorrectly, paying a pharmacist based on the script, instead of based on the patient and based on the outcomes and based on the ongoing services that could be given to that patient to navigate what they're going through. What are your insights on the leverage, the specific leverage of someone who has, you know, 6, 8, and 12 years of education in medication management?
Yeah, and I think that's an interesting one because, you know, I think that the industry and the regulator can create the opportunity for change, but it's going to be the patients and the consumers on mass which will drive the adoption of the change. I often say that. So I think that the collaborative care agreements that you referenced, I think that's sort of step one. But I think that employing technology and, you know, actually creating virtual interfaces to stimulate that demand and until we get to a tipping point, I think that is likely. Well, history will tell us that's how change happens. So I think that it's just very important as you reference.
Dr. Becky Winslow is one of our podcast hosts. She is leading the PGX for Pharmacists podcast, which focuses on how PGX pharmacogenomics is being used. And I'm going to quote her. She said in a recent post, "In pharmacy, we often talk about misaligned incentives within pharmaceutical channels that artificially inflate drug prices, but we rarely focus on the conversations on the misalignment between a payer paying for a specific medication for a patient in their condition, but the same payer not paying for a diagnostic test to determine if that medication will be therapeutic or non-toxic for the patient before the patient consumes the medication." And, you know, bravo to you, Dr. Winslow, for citing that. But that's absolutely tied back to this report. And why are we spending money on expensive medications that we have the data, we have the ability, we have the technology that could tell us right now today if in fact that medication is going to work as intended? So I want to shout out to the pharma industry in saying, when you start building your formularies and your reimbursement models, we must have the ability to make sure that we can pre-assess if in fact that medication is going to work or not.
Yeah, and I do see, I've been a big supporter of outcomes-based reimbursement for years. And I see that with the advancement in some of the therapies, and we've got some pilots going at the moment with major pharma to look at how they can actually get reimbursed for outcomes. I think it'll be, you know, it's not going to be adopted en masse for everything at the flick of a switch, but I think it's going to be, yeah, it's a bit like those exponential adoption curves. But I think, you know, pick some winners at the moment, because it, for me, you know, and I reference, you know, I started life in the laboratory and as a research chemist, and you know, we're only, somebody somewhere has got to pay for innovation, and the whole system is struggling. Like I mentioned, it's, you know, the healthcare taking a larger share of GDP. So how can we get a fairer, more equitable reimbursement model that will actually drive productivity and efficacy and and that, you know, only the drugs or the medicines and the care, the therapies that work will actually be innovated. And it's a sort of a backwards sort of down the value chain cycle. But unless we have an outcomes-based reimbursement system with all the pricing pressures that we can see around the world, I would worry that innovation would be stopped, which would be a travesty for the industry. So that's the driver about why we made a strategic investment to really focus on some software products that really drive innovative and outcome-based contracting, admittedly being trialed at the moment in Europe. But I just see the innovation drying up if the industry doesn't shift to that sort of reimbursement. And it's got to be holistic.
Yes, absolutely. What is your advice for our pharmacists listening right now who are interested in transforming their specific businesses? And I think of our specialty pharmacy owners. I think of our privately owned pharmacists that are now making these micro chains that are developing 10, 20 locations to really serve their communities with a lot of the technologies that they want to adopt. And they don't want to be held back by these gigantic corporate infrastructure, behemoths that are out there kind of controlling 78% of the entire reimbursement and drug spend in the United States. But what, based on the data, based on this report, what's your call out right now to our consultant pharmacists?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, be really clear on what you want to be famous for. I mean, it's easy to say, but difficult to do because everybody wants to do everything. Yeah. And, you know, that you might have to stop doing and be really clear on stop doing certain things to be able to give yourself capacity to do more. But I would really I'm passionate about the business models of the future. Obviously read our report, but think about how then, you know, the humans at the center, the supply chain, the outcomes, the data, the sustainable supply chains actually work into that. And really think about, you know, how technology is going to, how can you in your individual bit, you know, use technology to make healthcare more human? What does that actually mean for your operating model? Who do you actually need to partner with? Because especially for, you know, the development of new business models and the flex, I think the biggest hindrance some of these large, organizations have at the moment is they are unable to innovate because they make such a good shareholder return as opposed to stakeholder return on their current operating model. Trust is a little bit broken in some areas. So, you know, but I think that all comes back to outcomes-based reimbursement, mutual trust, mutual value. One thing I might encourage, there's a video, it's a bit more of a film, but it's 8 minutes long that is a companion piece to the report. But that I think gives it, and we did that because it gives a visualization of the future and brings it more to life. Whereas report, I'm very proud of our report, but the companion video brings it to life. And I think that, you know, and discuss and share your ideas with others because, you know, sharing and discussing, you know, can fine tune the direction that you want to go in. But do something that you can easily, I always say to people, you know, if you were sitting around a dinner table with your family, could you articulate what you were actually planning to do and why? Because if you can't do that in a couple of simple sentences, then your operating model, your business is too complicated.
Yeah. That's great advice in and of itself. But what I'm hearing and would like to repeat to our listeners is if you want to make a go at becoming a consultant pharmacist, go very deep. Don't go shallow and wide. You know, become very defined. Become a specialist that your primary care physicians, they end up searching you out because you have become the expert in your community. And with 300 million people in this country, there is, and only 300,000 active pharmacists, there is more lives to be caring for to go around and build out these new business models and new roles for pharmacists who are very active. But Pamela, it has been an absolute pleasure and honor once again to have executive level members of your team come on the Pharmacy Podcast and share your insights, share your reporting. And we are so thankful.
It's my pleasure. And, you know, looking forward to working more closely together with the Pharmacy Podcast Network. So, you know, thanks for the invite this afternoon. I've very much enjoyed our conversation.
We have as well. You were listening with Pamela Spence with Ernst & Young's Global Health Sciences and Wellness. She's an industry leader. We will have reference to this report in the show notes. The title of the report was Five Trends Redefining the Health Sciences and Wellness Operating Model. And as always, I thank you so much, pharmacists, for what you do for all of our patients out there. A shout out to pharmacy technicians. We love you as well. And we always thank you for listening to the Pharmacy Podcast.